We appreciate the presence of everyone this afternoon. And that was a fine meal. Appreciate all the food that was brought and appreciate that meat that Amy brought. That was just great. Good time together. Let's not forget the gospel meeting, January 24. Be here before we turn around. Be upon us. Several weeks ago, I began a lesson. In fact, I had two parts of it. I called it Beyond the Beginning. And that Sunday morning, we covered 3 points from Genesis 1:1, John 1:1-2, and Ephesians 3:8-12. We were looking at various passages that had to do with the power and the wisdom and the might of God, the glory of God, the majesty of God, how that we see God exalted in the Scriptures. Genesis 1, He creates. There's nothing except God, and then He creates. And then in John 1:1-2, John goes into some detail and explaining to us how that God created by means of the second part of the Godhead called the Logos. Ha-Logos. The Word. Creation was joint participation of a divine manifestation. We talked about that. And then from Ephesians 3, we talked about how that there's always been an eternal purpose in the mind of God that includes us. It's a staggering point to think about that God had us in mind as well as everybody else that would ever obey the gospel of Christ in His eternal purpose. Then that afternoon, we went to Ephesians 1, 3, and 4 and discussed the significance and superiority of the spiritual over the physical. And then from Isaiah 57, we discuss the fact that God inhabits eternity. It's just like saying, in a way, you know, Mac lives in Sheffield. Well, God lives in eternity. They're not exactly parallel, but it's the kind of thing you have to do when you're talking about where God lives. He inhabits eternity. And so today I want us to come back and pick up just a few more passages that add on to that and elevate in our thinking the majesty, the loftiness of God. And if you have your Old Testament handy, I want you to go to Psalm 90. I've used that passage, quoted the first verse or two, or verse 2 I think I've used quite often, as well as verse 12 at funerals over the years that I was holding several funerals. Now notice, as he starts off, the psalmist starts off this by talking about our dwelling place. You can talk about how that God lives a certain place, but what do you talk about when you say God's people? Where do we live? And he says there's a sense in which this is correct language. Lord, Thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. So our life is in God. We live in God. And then he says, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hadst formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. And then he comes down to verse 4, 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as a watch in the night. And then come down to verse 7. He says, we're just like, you know, we're just consumed by thy anger. We need deliverance. We need help. You've got our iniquities in front of your faces, our secret sins in the light of thy countenance. Our days are passed away in thy wrath. We spend our years as a tale that is told. And then this one. The days of our years are 70 years. Somebody called my attention to that passage just a day or two ago. I think it was maybe Alicia. Somebody did. The days of our years are 70 years. And if by reason of strength they be 80, there's 80 years. Yet is their strength but labor and sorrow. It is soon cut off. And there's that expression Brother Bowen used. We fly away. And then verse 12, so teach us to number our days that we may get us a heart of wisdom. How many people went off to eternity, and maybe the first thing they said on the other side, I thought I had a few more days. But I didn't. And then maybe some others pass off, go on to eternity. Boy, I got a lot more days than ever I thought I'd have. And then the person got a lot more and the person got a few, and now it's all done, and it's just all equalized by eternity. It doesn't really matter, does it? I spent a moment on the earth. Well, I spent two. Well, I spent three. Does it really matter how many moments are spent in light of eternity? Now back to Genesis 1:1, in the light of Psalm 90, verses 1 and 2. God, and here's our point, point 6. God is before the beginning and He's after the end. Now that's proper language. God is before the beginning and He's after the end. It's like God is two book holders. Here's some books and here's this right here and here's this right here. And He's on this end of the books and the bookshelf, and He's on this end of the bookshelf. He's beyond the beginning and He is beyond the end. And when He uses the word in Genesis 1:1, it's a word that captures the concept, and it's hard to get your mind around. He creates. There's nothing there to work from. You have to distinguish between the agency of the someone, the person of God, and the concept of a something, and the concept of a nothing. I think I've mentioned this before, that we often take the word nothing and we try to make something out of it in order to talk about it. And that's the best we can do sometimes. Let's talk about nothing for a few moments. Okay. And when we focus on the concept of nothing, it's almost like we're bringing it into something in order to broach the topic. But nothing is nothing. There's nothing to get a hold of. It's not just a blank, dark wall. It's not a vacuum. It's not an empty space. It's not space. It's nothing. There you've got this agent, Jehovah, existing alone in eternity, inhabiting eternity. And in the beginning, God creates. So He doesn't start with something and make it something else. He starts with nothing and winds up with something. And it's not magic. It's not like pulling a rabbit or a rat. You got me thinking rat back there, I guess. A rabbit out of a hat, and the thing's already there. Who in the world has the capacity to start with nothing, and all of a sudden He says, something be there? Now you talk about power. We can't get our minds around that. That's what is referred to by the expression ex nihilo. Out of nothing. God makes out of nothing. Well, it's actually not coming out of nothing. It's coming from pure agency, the someone that is God. As far as content, out of nothing, nothing comes. But agency, the someone, God is able to create it. Now when you go to Exodus 20 and verse 11, when Moses records what God did, and he's hallowing the Sabbath day, but he talks about how that God made things, and He made things in 6 days. But He doesn't use this word for create. He uses the word for made. I do not have to defend a 6,000-year-old earth, in spite of what some of my brethren tell me. I just do not have to do that. I don't have to defend a billion-year-old universe or a million-year-old universe. I know why some people do that. They do that to accommodate evolutionary theory, which takes more than time to get it done. You can get billions and trillions of years in there for an evolutionist, and he still can't get his program off the starting block. It's not a matter of time. But I know why some people say, well, we can live with a billion-year-old universe. That's okay. We can accommodate science. That's not good science anyway. But neither is it good religion to say we've got to defend a 10,000-year-old earth. Why? Where did you get that idea? Well, he made the heavens and the earth in 6 days. Yeah, but he didn't create in 6 days. When you get past verse 2, and the Spirit of God brooded upon the face of the water, and verse 3, and God says, light be. And light was. But in the beginning, God creates bara. He starts with nothing and winds up with something. And then you've got the hovering of the Spirit like a helicopter over this dark mass of substance. It's materiality and it doesn't have form. It hasn't been designed. It's been created in the raw, but there's no design. And then God starts designing and forming. And Moses says in Exodus 20 that he did that in 6 days. And all the 6 days there are 24-hour periods. I very readily admit that and grant that. So I want to be careful about all of that. Now the next thing I want to say is, well, I want to give one more passage first. That word in Psalm 90 and verse 2, that before the mountains were brought forth, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God and you formed. The word formed there, the definition of that word is to turn in a circle, to whirl or twist. There are two main ideas to this verb, spinning and twisting, as in labor pains, whatever. Spinning and twisting. And that word is used in talking about some aspect of God's forming the earth. He twisted. He twirled, as it were. Amazing. Just a little insight that a word is giving me there. Now, the expression that comes 20th century, 21st century now, people want to talk about the Big Bang. The Big Bang. And there's a comedy show on television, you know. And it tries to tie humor in with, you know, sophistication and worldliness and scientific theory and bright, acute minds and all of that. The Big Bang. And I have read how that, to some, it does look like, right now, it does look like our universe right now is expanding. That the scientific evidence seems to suggest that. And they say that means that if that is true, that way back yonder, whenever it all got started, there was some sort of a bang, an explosion that throws everything out and it just keeps going and going and going. Well, if that's the way that God started it, it's fine with me. I don't think that most people that think about the Big Bang think about God. But let me suggest something to you right here quickly. If someone explains the existence of the universe by claiming that it all started with a bang, then either, number one, by Big Bang, that means something that already existing, that was existing, now exploded. If you have a bang, you've got an explosion of some sort. Okay, so number one, if you use that expression, I believe this is all here by the Big Bang. Okay, then either something was already here, somebody might say it's infinitesimal, it's the smallest thing, it's just almost nothing. Okay, it's almost nothing, but that means it's a something. And so then you're saying this something exploded. Or you're saying, number two, that Big Bang equals nothing becoming something. Now, if number one is correct, then there was something here before the Big Bang, so it didn't explain anything, did it? No, it's not good enough yet. If number two is correct, that's creation. Did you follow that? Just throwing around words, you know, well, I don't necessarily believe in God. I believe in the Big Bang. Okay, what in the world is that? Just not like using the word evolution. It's like using the expression natural selection. How does nature select? If it got selected, are you sure nature did it? If nature did it, how does nature make choices? I mean, you use expressions that are, they're misnomers. They're misnomers. But it covers a lot of ignorance. And it makes it look like you really have a handle on the mechanism of the way nature goes. I tell you, brethren, you delve into language and start hunting for the concepts, sometimes it's a barren landscape. And people just get away with language and expressions and sounds and sophisticated connections of concepts. And, oh yes, they really understand the field. They know what's going on here. I repeat, either something already existed, now exploded, or nothing became something. And that means either that there was something already here, which is no explanation for the universe, and or the Big Bang equals creation. If God creates, first of all, by a bang, that's fine with me. He never used that terminology. But if that's the way it got started, that's if he says light be, light was, I don't argue with that. And if he says, when you start analyzing nothing into something, you see, it's not nothing as a category becoming something. It's the someone. That's what I started to say a while ago. You have to distinguish between the someone and the something and the nothing. And the only way you can get into the discussion of something from nothing is by a someone who doesn't get it out of the nothing, but by his sheer power, he knows how to call non-existent things into the category of existing ones. That's the powerful God we serve. That's the mighty God that we serve. And so that's a good way, I think, of approaching the Big Bang. Now, right quickly, I think I'll just cover one more point and we'll stop. I want you to go to Psalm 139 with me. This passage is just beautiful. In Psalm 139, David has some very fundamental things to say about God's... It's not an intrusion, it's just God's pervasiveness of all that He's made. God knows everything He's made. He is where everything is that He's made. He understands it all. Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought. Afar off, Thou compassest my path and my lying down and art acquainted with all my ways. There's nothing about me, He says, You don't know. There's not a word in my tongue, O Lord. Thou knowest it all together. Thou hast beset me behind and before, and Thou hast laid Thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from Thy Spirit? Whither shall I flee from Thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, Thou art there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, Thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning, dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there Thy hand shall lead me, and Thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, Surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Even the darkness hideth not from Thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to Thee. Those are just concepts and creations that accommodate me as God made me. For Thou hast possessed my reins, Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise Thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are Thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from Thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. And you remember months ago when we were still studying Ephesians, and we got into Ephesians 4 and verse 9, and there was a verse over there about Jesus going into the lowest parts of the earth. And I made the point at that time that it looks like, because of this passage, it looks like over there in Ephesians 4 and 9, that was not simply talking just generally about His incarnation. He was talking about His virgin conception. It's figurative language discussing His conception. That's the way He uses it right here. When I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. He's talking about the womb. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God! How great is the sum of them! If I should count them, they are more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with thee. Surely thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men. For they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain. Do not I hate them, Lord, with a perfect that I hate thee, them that hate thee? Am I not grieved with those that rise up against thee? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. Now look at how he finishes this. Search me. See, he started out that way. O Lord, thou hast searched me. Verse 1. Search me, O God. Know my heart. Try me. Know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. That is a most magnificent psalm depicting knowledge about God that we cannot get our minds around. And in that psalm, you've got the person of God, you've got the power of God, you've got the presence of God, you've got the prescience of God, knowledge beforehand, and you've got the purity of God. All of that in Psalm 139. There's a lot of difference between a theist who walks on the earth with confidence, knowing that he's walking with God, and somebody just drifting around wondering how in the world we get here. How in the world we get here? Where in the world are we going? And we leave it up to scientists or philosophers to try to figure out things for us and tell us how we ought to live and what we ought to do. We better be listening to God, who made everything other than Himself, is quite satisfied with Himself, made us in His image. And do you remember when the angels and the shepherds were in the field in Luke 2? In the scene of the birth of Christ, and angels talk to shepherds, peace on earth, goodwill among men, in whom He is well pleased. A striking little comment. God was happy with somebody. I mentioned how that Malachi closes on in a sort of a gloomy thing. Because if He doesn't send the blessing, He's going to have to send the curse. That's the way the earth will be shaping up by 400 years from now. And yet, around the birth of Jesus, angels said God was pleased with somebody. He knows the whole story. And He tries to help us to see what we can to understand the majesty of it all and the power and the brilliance of it all, the glory of it all. Never give up on God. So, Psalm 139, my point was that God is always in complete control. The points I covered, God is before the beginning and after the end. And then this one, God is always in complete control. The psalmist refers to the person and the power and the presence and the prescience and the purity of God. And it's a wonder. And we get to serve that God. He sent His Son. We are His children in His family, bound for His glory. May God be praised that it's so. If you're here this afternoon and not a Christian, come in faith. Repent of your sins, make the good confession. If you're baptized into Christ, if you've done that and gone astray, we encourage you to come home right now. While together we stand, while we sing, won't you come?